Reconnect and heal today. Welcome to Love Never Dies with Dr. Jamie Turndorf.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Love Never Dies Radio and Dr. Turndorf, Turn on the Love on Binge TV Network. So today is a really, really wonderful show. We're talking about food. You know, many people with food, weight, or body image issues think they have a problem with sugar or that they're addicted to carbs, and they're convinced that food is the problem. And according to Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, you're wrong. Food is not the problem. Food is the solution to the problem. Diets don't work in the long run, that we know. And the key to sustainable weight loss is to stop dieting and focus on what's eating at you. And Dr. Nina provides strategies to lose weight without counting a single calorie, carb, or fat gram. Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin. She's a psychoanalyst, author, and radio host specializing in food, weight, and body image. She's considered a thought leader in the field of eating psychology, and she's been featured in Psychology Today, The Los Angeles Times, Prevention, Real Simple, Red Book, Huffington Post, and many other shows and periodicals. She's a frequent guest expert on the Dr. Drew podcast and other shows. She brings a fresh perspective to weight loss by helping people focus on what's eating at them instead of on what they're eating. She hosts the Dr. Nina Show on LA Talk Radio, and she's the author of Food for Thought, Perspectives on Eating Disorders, and Beyond the Primal Addiction, co-edited with Salman Akhtar. And her newest book, The Binge Cure, 7 Steps to Outsmart Emotional Eating, is going to be released in August 2019. So without further ado, I want to introduce you to Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin. Are you with me?
I am with you. It's great to be here.
So great to have you. We had a little bit of technical stuff, and you were just so mellow. You were just so mellow through it all. So let's talk about your central premise. It's not what you eat. It's what's eating at you. Can you explain what you mean by that?
Yes, so many people who struggle with food think they have no willpower, think they have no control, think that the problem is food. And actually, food is the solution to the problem. And I will share an example to really illustrate what I mean. Several years ago, I had a patient, I'll call her Jenna, not her real name, but I call her Jenna. And she came to me and she said, "Hey, Dr. Nina, maybe some of your other patients have emotional eating problems," but she said she was a food addict, and furthermore, she could prove it. So I said, "Well, I am all ears. What's your proof?" And she told me that the night before, she had been chilling out after work, had a good day at work, nothing was bothering her, when all of a sudden, Ben and Jerry's was calling her name. And she said, "Calling my name. I had to have it. I'm addicted to Chunky Monkey," she tells me. I said, "Well, let's wait. Let's not so fast. What were you watching on TV?" She said, "Well, I was watching Charmed, my favorite show. See? I was happy. I was watching my favorite show. I was chilling out. Nothing was bothering me. I'm addicted to ice cream. I'm a sugar addict," she says. I said, What were you watching? Which episode of Charmed was that?" She said, "Well, it's when the devil comes down and the sisters start fighting and everything gets very contentious and awful." And then she stopped and had like a light bulb over her head. And she said, oh, because at that moment she realized that watching the show had activated her own conflicts over her own sister. And rather than get in touch with those feelings, she went to ice cream for escape. It was the solution to her anxiety and anger and sadness. And then she ended up focusing on ice cream and getting mad at herself for eating ice cream instead of, well, who is she really mad at? Her sister. So that is really an illustration of how there's unconscious, hidden motivations to what we do. And when we had just focused on ice cream, and she'd been to countless other like treatment centers, and they would say, "Well, when ice cream calls your name, you know, take a, you know, brush your teeth, or, you know, take a walk, or take a bubble bath, or wasn't going to help her. She needed to get to the root of what was going on. And after that, after we dealt with her sister issues, guess what? Ice cream stopped calling her. She wasn't hearing from Ben and Jerry's anymore.
You know, it's so funny. You and I are like twins separated at birth, because we both have the psychoanalytic training and background. And so everything, you know, they say that 98% of everything you do and say is motivated by unconscious forces and factors. So, but that's the whole point. If you're not conscious of it, you don't know what's driving your cravings or your eating habits. I had a patient who was only craving vanilla ice cream. And so I listened to my unconscious, and I saw a bowl of vanilla ice cream as a big breast. You know, like a big, round, soft, mushy, sweet thing. And I said, that vanilla ice cream is the breast. You know, you just want your mommy's milk. Once I helped her to, you know, see that, you know, we can swim with the other person's unconscious and see what's really going on. That's a feeling of hunger and emptiness. My mother didn't nurse me and love me. She stopped with the vanilla ice cream craving. So
yes.
I totally, 100% agree that so much of our food cravings comes from unrecognized, unconscious conflicts and feelings. But now I'm going to play the devil's advocate. I know you're going to really, really, you're probably going to get mad at me when I say this. You know, I mean, I have been in the psychoanalytic tradition for decades, and I always look at things as, you know, being deeper than what we think. But I do also realize that we are a body of chemicals. We can't separate the body and the mind and the emotions. I mean, we're all one. And I have observed, for example, we know that, you know, the neurotransmitters like serotonin, endorphins, GABA, when you have neurotransmitter imbalance, for example, when your endorphins go down or your serotonin goes down or your GABA goes down, you can crave. And for many years post-menopause, I was taking a sleep aid that contained GABA, right? And I know that low GABA can make you crave sugary, fatty foods. And when I stopped taking this all-natural GABA sleep aid, I started craving sugary, fatty foods.
And I agree. And what I'm talking about is when people are turning to food to resolve a psychological conflict. Not all cravings are about solving conflict or
exactly
or numbing or anything like that. So
exactly.
I'm not mad at you at all. I think it's a great question. And you helped me bring up a good point, because like a lot of people will say, well, if I don't have you here with me, I don't know my hidden motivations for eating. And so I've been doing this for 18 years, and I started noticing that when people craved certain types of foods to resolve certain emotional conflicts, like for example, comfort, when they wanted ice cream, it was usually, or something smooth and creamy, it was usually that they wanted comfort. When they were feeling angry, they would often choose crunchy foods, like anything with a bite, right? And yeah, a bite.
That's totally analytic, right? The oral aggression phase. I'll bite the.
Exactly. Yeah. And filling bulky foods like pizza and pasta and cake and bread and all of that often signals filling a void. So when we look at, well, what is the motivation attached to, like, why are you eating that? Then you can get to the underlying need or emotion. I just have to tell you your story about the ice cream brought up this story that it made me think of this patient who, she came to me. I write about her in Beyond the Primal Addiction in my food addiction chapter. And she came to me because she couldn't get enough donuts. Like, donuts were her downfall. That's what she said. Donuts are my downfall. And we figured out that it was the empty space in the donut so symbolized, like, the emptiness that she wasn't getting. Oh, but wait, it gets better. So then she shifts from wanting donuts to wanting, I don't know what they're called, but they're pastries filled with a cream filling. Whatever.
Oh, you mean like a cream puff or a profiterole or something?
Yes. I don't know my pastries, sorry. But it was these cream puffs. And one day, she would always get two of them. And it always had to be white filling. She would not get chocolate. So one day, she got two of them, and one of them had no white cream filling. And she went back, she said, my cream puff is empty, I want one with the filling. And they said, we only have chocolate. She said, I can't have chocolate. And she's telling me this, and she's holding her arms, I don't know if you can see me.
For the breath!
She's like, I just want my cream filling! And I said, that cream filling is mother's milk.
There you go!
It was always about the mother, but it was so profoundly about that. And she did have a very non-maternal mother. And so she was trying to get, symbolically, get what she couldn't get from her mother, and she
Absolutely.
Was in her 40s, through this symbolic representation of mothering.
There you go.
Yes, and when you start looking at it that way, symbolically, it's like a whole world opens up, and then you can resolve the true hidden problem that is the root, which I love that analogy, because a root, like the unconscious, you cannot see the root, but we know it's there because it grows weeds. We cannot discern our unconscious. We just know by our behavior.
So, right, and I'm going to extend your root metaphor. The whole trend now in this world of psychology is cognitive behavioral therapy. So people work with you on trying to change your thoughts or extinguish behaviors. And to me, that's like cutting off the root at the surface of the ground, and the actual bottom part of the root is not removed, so the problem just keeps growing back. You have to get to the root cause, the deep unconscious mechanism, and then you're fully going to resolve it and uproot that weed.
Exactly. And that's why I tell people, I don't believe in recovery from, say, binge eating or bulimia or anorexia. I don't believe in recovery. I believe in liberation.
Once you
get that root out, it's gone. When my patient and I worked through her conflict about her sister and her inability to express anger towards another person or feel it, guess what? She stopped craving ice cream.
Exactly.
And over and over and over.
Exactly. You know, it's so funny. You and I use such similar metaphors, because you saw the two cream puffs and the bowl. It's just a big bowl of white mother's milk. And, it's so funny where you talk about the donut, because I coined this expression. I call it the hole in the donut syndrome. And I related it to, isn't it a riot? Because I related it to, when people are grieving the bodily loss of a loved one. And, my transdimensional grief resolution method that I developed after my husband left his body is you reconnect. You don't say goodbye. You reconnect and you stay connected and you dialogue and you heal unfinished business. That's a big part of the method. So a lot of times people will say, I don't feel you, or I don't feel you physically, or you're not here in a body. And that's the hole in the donut syndrome, because you're focusing on, I'm missing your physical presence. That's the hole, the void. But the entire donut is the loved one in spirit form. So, you focus on what does feed you instead of focusing on what is empty and missing.
Yeah, and to that point, I often say there are two mothers or two fathers. There's the one who exists or existed, and then there's the one you've internalized in your head. And a lot of people will treat themselves the way they were treated, but treat other people in a completely different way. But that idea of that we internalize people as well. We internalize, as you know, we internalize that, and so many people, if they weren't nurtured enough, if there was a misattunement. I'm not about blame, by the way. I'm about explaining.
I like the misattunement. It's very neutral language. Like, my nipple wasn't in alignment with your mouth at the right moment.
Right. I see you've read some Melanie Klein. Melanie Klein would be so proud of you. Yeah, so there's a misattunement, and there's an interpretation of what's going on. It's that interpretation that is often internalized. And then, you know, people don't know how to self-soothe. And self-soothing is the number one important change people have to make to heal their relationship with food, whatever is going on with it. I hear a lot of this. Another example, a patient, it was the holiday time, and she said, oh, she's going to this party, and she's telling me about this party. It was going to be catered by this fabulous restaurant here in LA, and she was so excited, and she's going to give herself permission to eat because, you know, with the anti-diet mentality, if diets don't work, deprivation leads to binging. So as she was on the way to the party, she was telling herself, I'm going to enjoy myself. I'm going to have a little of whatever I want, and that's okay. That's all right. And so she gets to the party, and she has a little more than what she would have ideally wanted, and she's driving back from the party, and she says to herself, you are such a loser. You can't even go to one party without losing control. You're never going to lose weight. You're just awful. No one's going to love you. And now notice the tense. On the way, I'm just going to be okay, and I'm going to have. And on the way back, it's, you are a loser. You have no control. You have no willpower.
Yeah, like her mom, her dad is taking up real estate in her brain, and her parent, the toxic interjected parent, is talking and beating her up. And she knew this? It was her parent talking to her in her head?
No.
She hadn't gotten that far.
So many people don't even hear themselves. I will say, you know, it's interesting. You just talk to yourself in a mean way, in a critical, judgmental, horrible way, in second-person language. And they won't even realize they're doing it. And then I said, now say it again, but say that from an I place. Say it from first person. I'm such a loser. I have no willpower. I suck. And they can't. It's too mean. So one of the strategies that's so simple is that I tell people, catch that critical voice. And if you're talking to yourself in a mean way, using you language, stop. Try doing it from an I place. It's going to feel too mean, but stop. Notice it and stop. And that sometimes is so powerful.
Definitely.
So powerful.
Definitely. You know, what I always say, it's so funny, I had a patient who was speaking this way, and I said, whose voice is that? Well, it's mine. And I said, well, it's not yours, because no baby ever came out of the womb saying, you dumb idiot, you popped left when you should have popped right. No, it's not your voice. You don't talk to yourself that way. You don't talk to your children that way. So at first, just at least know who's talking garbage in your head. And you don't have to try to stop it, because we know if you try to stop thinking about a pink elephant, that's all you think about. So you don't try to stop it, but at least know who's talking to you and say, oh, hi, Ma, there you go, putting me down. Or, hi, Dad, there you go. That's already a beginning.
Yes, and then heal that original relationship. Heal the original wound that caused you to keep that person alive with you being mean, or keep that relationship.
That's how you stay close. That's what you're saying.
Exactly.
That you keep the person alive in your head, because there's such an emptiness. You didn't love me the way I wanted. So at least having some mother, even an abusive mother or father, is keeping you close. It's something rather than nothing. So that's so wise what you're saying. You've got to heal the wound, and then I don't need to keep this abusive parent of my past memory so alive and so present.
Yeah. And I think, I love that you're a psychoanalyst, because there's so few psychoanalysts out there now. And it's that realizing that everything is serving a purpose. Like that it's hard to relinquish the internal relationship, because it means truly letting go of the person, and that's just untenable, and that's too scary. And food represents relationship, because food, our first experience of relationship and bonding, is being, as you know, but I'm saying to the listeners, being held, yes, being held in arms, having the gaze of the mother, and being fed. And so in our unconscious minds, we don't think of it consciously, but food equals mothering, food equals nurturing, food equals relationship.
Exactly.
And that, we even use the same language, right? We talk
and
about...
And even the nipple, it's like, now I'm corn niblets, you know, give me some corn niblets, you know, everything has a meaning to the unconscious.
Right.
And,
yeah.
You know, I don't think really... I don't know anybody. I mean, people say, oh, your view is skewed because of what you do. But I don't know anybody that had the perfect, ideal parenting experience. It's just the human condition, you know?
Yes. There is no perfection. And often, it's not about abuse. People will say, oh, but I wasn't so bad. And I said, look, there are two kinds of injuries. One is a giant steak knife through your heart that's painful and big and devastating. But 1,000 small cuts are also painful. So
that's right.
Your pain needs your attention, not your condemnation. And I just want to say one thing about psychoanalysis is that everyone, and I'm not saying this to you, I am saying this to you listeners. People say, well, why is it always about the past? The past is over. And the point is, no, the past is being replayed in the present. And
absolutely.
Our job is to look at what's being reenacted in the present, so
absolutely.
We can put it in the past.
Exactly. Because, you know, I love the example that of Freud, the little boy goes into his consulting room and he doesn't want to be left alone. And mom says, I'll be back in 50 minutes. And the boy runs to the window and waves goodbye as she turns the corner and disappears out of sight. And Freud noticed throughout this session, the boy kept running to the window and waving to thin air. And that's when he realized, oh my gosh, trauma causes us to repeat over and over again the trauma until we can hopefully work it through. So repetition is the clue of trauma, and we all end up, if we don't work it through, we end up repeating, recreating, recapitulating till the cows come home. Now, speaking of recreating and recapitulating, I need to take a little moment to do a break. But we're going to be back in a moment on Love Never Dies Radio and Dr. Turndorf, Turn on the Love on Binge TV Network.
Is something missing in your life? Maybe you feel lonely and unloved, or your work doesn't bring you joy, or you're secretly jealous of others. Hi, I'm Dr. Jamie Turndorf. Millions of people, even those who are successful and surrounded by people who love them, secretly feel empty. The real source of our discontent is disconnection, and connecting to others and feeling love to our core is the cure. But to really connect, you gotta get naked. And I don't mean dropping trow. I'm talking about radical emotional nudity, where we expose our deepest self, warts and all. Being seen and loved in this vulnerable place is the key to unlocking the door to self-love, healing, deeply intimate relationships, vibrancy, and joy in every area of your life. Join me August 9th through 11th at 1440 Multiversity in Scotts Valley, California for my only West Coast event this year. To find out more and to register, visit askdrlove.com/live events. That's askdrlove.com/live events. See you at 1440 Multiversity.
Love Never Dies is now on the Dream Vision 7 radio network every Wednesday and Thursday at 1 p.m. and 1 a.m. Eastern Time. Dr. Jamie Turndorf, also known as Dr. Love, is the number one international best-selling author of Love Never Dies, How to Reconnect and Make Peace with the Deceased. If you're grieving the loss of a loved one, tune in and find out how to reconnect and heal any unfinished business using Dr. Turndorf's groundbreaking new Dialoguing with the Departed technique. Visit AskDrLove.com to find out more.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.
You're listening to Love Never Dies with Dr. Jamie Turndorf. If you yearn to get along better with your life partner or spouse, friends, family members, and even coworkers, Dr. Turndorf's book, Kiss Your Fights Goodbye, Dr. Love's 10 Simple Steps to Cooling Conflict and Rekindling Your Relationship, shows you how to turn conflict into connection for a lifetime of lasting love. Find out more about Kiss Your Fights Goodbye at AskDrLove.com. This is Love Never Dies with Dr. Jamie Turndorf. This show is for you, the listener. Once again, here's Dr. Turndorf.
Hello again, and welcome back to Love Never Dies Radio and Dr. Turndorf, Turn on the Love on Binge Networks TV. I'm having the most wonderful conversation with Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, psychoanalyst, author, and radio host specializing in food, weight, and body image. You know what I noticed during the commercial breaks? You were nodding, you know, like, what's so wonderful about you is that you're so relational, so that even during break, you're relating to what my voice is saying in the commercial, and, you know, oh, yeah, I agree, yeah, it's just a lovely quality that you have.
Oh, thank you. I would have been a terrible analyst in the 50s because I can't do the neutral analyst look. I just have to respond.
Well, and you know,
and I think that's good.
And I do too. You know, it's funny because I have used the analytic couch for my, you know, 36 years in practice. And I had a patient come to me decades ago and she said, you know, I was in therapy. This wasn't even with an analyst, just a psychologist. And I talked about my childhood years on end and wept. And I said, well, what did the doctor say? Nothing. And I said, she said, I just got worse and worse and worse. I said, because he was recreating your abandonment. So what you're saying is you need a response. You need a corrective experience. I need somebody to be attuned to me the way my parent wasn't. So him sitting there and just watching her cry re-injured her.
Yes, agreed. I had some of the biggest arguments when I was in grad school with that was gratifying the patient. You shouldn't gratify the patient. I
said, baloney.
This person was abandoned, and that would be exactly what you said. It would be
re-injuring. Yes.
Some people have said to me, wow, seeing you go, seeing your face, and I also use the couch for some people, but for people who see my face, they say, wow, it wasn't until I saw your reaction that I realized this really was bad that what happened.
Exactly. Like, exactly.
So,
I love that about you. Where do you live, by the way?
I live in L.A. I live in Calabasas, me and the Kardashians, the Calabasas area of L.A.
Now, how far is L.A. from the workshop that I'm doing at 1440?
What city is the workshop
near? It's in Scotts Valley.
Is it Northern California?
It's near San Jose.
Oh, yeah, it's several hours, maybe five hours away or 4 hours.
Yeah, it's like another state. Yeah, because if you had been close, I would have said come, but it's not that close, yeah.
I would love to come, but alas, not this time.
Yeah, right? Because you're so far away. Absolutely. So now the book that you have that's coming out, would you talk a little bit about that book?
Yes. So the previous books are really more scholarly books. But Food for Thought was designed to be a crossover book that was for other therapists or analysts or whatever, but that I wanted it to be readable because one of the problems with psychoanalysts is they write things that nobody can understand. You have to have a thesaurus with you.
Wait a minute. Nobody can digest it.
Perfect. So I decided to write a book that would be more digestible and palatable for mainstream readers. So it's called The Binge Cure, 7 Steps to Outsmart Emotional Eating. And in that, I really take all the readers through, you know, why ditch dieting, a lot of the things that we're talking about, your relationship to yourself, your relationship to others, You know, how do you stop the sabotage? How do you let yourself be and not be in constant state of doing? A lot of the things that people have told me in these years, that I wanted to write a book that really spoke to them, not only analyze, well, why are you doing this, but here's what to do differently. People need help doing something differently, and that's what I want to provide. That's what I like to provide on my radio show. Like, okay, we're not just thinking about it. We have to do something differently, and you still need to learn why it's hard for you to do something differently.
Exactly. You're not, because if you just try, to extinguish a behavior, you often are left with the behavior and then the guilt and the shame and the anxiety around, I couldn't stop it, you know. So now you have a double problem. Yes.
And that's why so many people who go to, what the joke is, people go to AA and then they become addicted to coffee.
Exactly, or sugar.
So it just shifts.
Or donuts.
Or donuts, right. So that, like, thoughts and beliefs lead to feelings, lead to behavior. You focus on the behavior, you get nowhere. And so the book is really breaking it down in common, everyday language, like I'm talking to you, to help people really use their minds to understand their behavior and change it.
Yeah. You know, I'm sure you also ask your patients and your audience, when you feel an impulse to binge on something, pause and give yourself the moment to evaluate what thoughts and feelings preceded the impulse to go and put your face in a trough of vanilla ice cream or something, you know, and just slowing it down.
Well, I like to say, and I didn't originate this, but I use it, the ride the binge wave. So just like a wave, it builds and builds and builds and builds, and then it finally crests and then it diminishes, to remember that this feeling is not going to last forever, and to move from reaction to reflection. So reaction is, oh, something's making me uncomfortable. I must do something to get away from this feeling. Versus, something's making me uncomfortable. I can bear it. Without turning to whatever, without going in the kitchen or the drive-thru.
Yeah.
And then later I'm going to understand what was that about. So, absolutely.
Yeah. You know, I have begun working on PTSD. I write a column now in Masters of Health magazine, Winning the War on PTSD. And this was all, basically, it began because I fell in love with a trooper who was fought tours in Afghanistan, and he has PTSD. So I started this national study. And so as a result, I've done so much research on magnesium and how it reverses PTSD. And I'm mentioning this because magnesium is a precursor to, you know, all the neurotransmitters. They, you know, you need magnesium in order to produce them. And I have a patient who's been with me for quite some time who was always plagued with binge eating. And she's very aware of her thoughts and her feelings, and she's in touch with them. And she always felt weak and inadequate, and, you know, I have no impulse control, I have no discipline, I can't help it. And I realized, you know, there is a brain chemical imbalance here. She has PTSD. Everybody with abuse from childhood has more or less PTSD, because one bad trauma and it just makes you excrete all the magnesium from your body and you can't replenish it. You just can't, because we can't get enough orally in oral supplement form without getting diarrhea. So we're always one behind the eight ball, and we all have had these traumatic experiences in childhood. So I started thinking, wait, she's got PTSD. She has magnesium depletion. So I said to her, listen, I want you to run this experiment. Just use this transdermal magnesium, which is more absorbable, right, than the oral. And I bet you in a week, you are going to have better GABA levels and you will stop craving. And sure enough, it was a week later, she said, I am able to control myself now and I don't crave and I don't binge anymore. So I always want people to consider, look at everything, like you say, look at the emotional, the unconscious mechanisms, but also be open to whatever might be going on biochemically. Like I said, I knew, wait a minute, the only variable that changed is I stopped this sleep aid and suddenly I'm craving. That's not me. I know it's biochemical. You know, my GABA went too low as a rebound from stopping this supplement with GABA. So, you know, we have to be open, right, to everything, mm-hmm. you know, all the different yes. elements.
I agree. People often ask me, well, what's it like to treat eating disorders? And I say, I don't treat eating disorders. I treat people who develop eating disorders for reasons that are as unique as they are.
And exactly.
So everybody is an individual, and what's right for one person is not necessarily right for another person.
Absolutely.
And we do have a mind-body connection. So that's great.
Yes, it's marvelous. Now, do you also work with bulimics who have the binge purge cycle?
Yeah, in my private practice, I see people with anorexia, bulimia, and binge eating. I see a lot of people who also have, of course, the most common eating disorder, and a lot of people don't know they have it, is binge eating disorder. There are more people with binge eating disorder than there are with bulimia and anorexia combined, only they just think they're a food addict, they think they have no willpower, whatever. I see a lot of people who have gotten gastric bypass surgery, lost
and
200 pounds, and gained on their way to either gaining all of it back, and they realize that they really need to look at what's eating at them, why they're eating, not controlling what they're eating.
Exactly. So, and, you know, I was just this is like a world, a culture of debauchery. I saw a commercial yesterday for Red Robin, and they showed people scarfing potato, what are they called, French fries. And they said, you know, endless French fries, as many as you want. And they're just scarfing and scarfing. Now, the thing is also, the foods that we're addicted to have brain-altering effects. So that it becomes whatever it might have begun as an emotional issue, or I'm going to, you know, swallow my rage by swallowing food, or fill my emptiness with a bowl of, you know, boobs, you know, ice cream. But once you start getting addicted to the substances, they have a life of their own. Like, wheat is as addictive as heroin. Once you start it, you can't get off it very easily, you know?
Well, that's a controversial subject. I would say that there's an eating addiction, not a food addiction. One of the reasons, what you just brought up, is people will say, well, it's as addictive as heroin, except when you talk to a scientist about that, they'll say, well, that comes from studies with rats. Rats will choose food over heroin. But there's a reason for that, which is that rats are motivated by survival. Heroin is not going to make them survive. Food is going to make them survive. They will choose food every time. So what I have found with my patients is most of them feel like addicts. They certainly feel like they're addicted to the substance of it. But in time, as we process what's going on, what's underground, what's in their, what's hidden in their unconscious,
they don't have the same drive.
They don't feel the same.
Don't you notice that, I mean, there's a connection between the allergy addiction cycle, and that when you eat foods that you're allergic to, your body secretes histamines, and histamines are as addictive as heroin. So even when we resolve the underlying reason why we started, we have to go through a withdrawal of the histamines that we're addicted to, and you might have a few tough days as you're removing the stuff that your body is allergic and addicted to. There is that component.
Yeah, but when you realize, okay, this is, that you know what this is, like, okay, this is some kind of withdrawal, then you can be reflective and say, okay, I can get through this.
I can get through this. Exactly. And now I have to break my addiction to our conversation and take a break.
Okay.
I'll be back in a moment on Love Never Dies Radio and Dr. Turndorf, Turn on the Love on Binge Network TV.
Is something missing in your life? Maybe you feel lonely and unloved, or your work doesn't bring you joy, or you're secretly jealous of others. Hi, I'm Dr. Jamie Turndorf. Millions of people, even those who are successful and surrounded by people who love them, secretly feel empty. The real source of our discontent is disconnection, and connecting to others and feeling love to our core is the cure. But to really connect, you gotta get naked. And I don't mean dropping trowel. I'm talking about radical emotional nudity, where we expose our deepest self, warts and all. Being seen and loved in this vulnerable place is the key to unlocking the door to self-love, healing, deeply intimate relationships, vibrancy, and joy in every area of your life. Join me August 9th through 11th at 1440 Multiversity in Scotts Valley, California for my only West Coast event this year. To find out more and to register, visit askdrlove.com/live events. That's askdrlove.com/live events. See you at 1440 Multiversity.
Love Never Dies is now on the Dream Vision 7 radio network every Wednesday and Thursday at 1 p.m. and 1 a.m. Eastern Time. Dr. Jamie Turndorf, also known as Dr. Love, is the number one international best-selling author of Love Never Dies, How to Reconnect and Make Peace with the Deceased. If you're grieving the loss of a loved one, tune in and find out how to reconnect and heal any unfinished business using Dr. Turndorf's groundbreaking new Dialoguing with the Departed technique. Visit AskDrLove.com to find out more.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.
You're listening to Love Never Dies with Dr. Jamie Turndorf. If you can't stop crying over the bodily loss of a loved one, Dr. Turndorf's number one international bestseller, Love Never Dies, How to Reconnect and Make Peace with the Deceased, will show you how to toss out the tissues and transform your grief into joy using her groundbreaking new Dialoguing with the Departed technique that enables you to reconnect and even heal unfinished business with those in spirit without the assistance of a medium, channeler, or psychic. Sign up for Dr. Love's free newsletter at AskDrLove.com and receive an exciting gift, a free excerpt of Love Never Dies. And now, back to Love Never Dies with Dr. Jamie Turndorf.
Hello again, and welcome back to Love Never Dies Radio and Dr. Turndorf, Turn on the Love on Binge Network TV. I'm talking with Nina Savelle Rocklin. She's a psychoanalyst, author, and radio host specializing in food, weight, and body image. She's a thought leader in the field of eating psychology. And, you know, beyond all of this, I just love her. What can I say? I just love having you on the show. It's just so awesome. Yeah, it's awesome speaking to such a kindred spirit who speaks my language. You know, it's really wonderful. And it's really wonderful. And you know, what's great too is we're able to have these conversations in which I'll raise, you know, controversial points. And you're wonderful in how, you know, you embrace these ideas that, and you just integrate it into your work. You're a very clearly skilled clinician, you know, you understand. And what comes through, especially for me about you, is this holding feeling. You know, they say that a very good analyst has the mothering feeling, and you provide that just in your whole energy. There's that feeling of being held in the palm of your hand and accepted. And that heals just that part of you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
That makes me so happy.
Well, I'm glad because, I mean, this reminds me of, you know, the Mrs. Doubtfire movie. I was about to say, I'm not a therapist, dear. I just see what I see. You remember the scene, Mrs. Doubtfire? So he comes in dressed as Mrs. Doubtfire, and he's going to try to get to be the nanny because the wife won't let him be watching the kids after school. So she starts to trash her X, which is Robin Williams, now dressed as Mrs. Doubtfire. And he says, "Excuse me, dear, I'm sure you normally ask the children to leave the room before verbally bashing your ex." She goes, "Oh, well, then I'd never see them, ha, ha, ha." And then she says, "But how'd you know that I have an ex?" And he says, "I'm not a therapist, dear. I just see what I see." So I just see what I see about you, and it's so obvious. And I'm sure your patients tell you, too. You know?
I've heard that before.
Yeah, it's wonderful. Well, what I heard once was a patient said, "I know you came from a terrible childhood." I said, "How do you know that?" He said, "How else would you be able to understand me so well?" Right?
In this regard, they are wise.
Yes, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's all part of what makes us who we are. They say that psychoanalysts, shrinks, have had the worst childhoods, and I'm sure that's true. You come into it wanting to fix your own parents and your own family, you know.
And heal other people, maybe heal oneself early on through other people, but of course,
yeah,
having to be in analysis while you train to be an analyst,
right,
helps you understand that. So,
right. And, you know, Hyman Spotnitz, who studied under Freud, he was the supervisor of my supervisor, Lou Ormond, the founder of modern group psychoanalysis. So that's on the East Coast, you know. And Spotnitz always said that your patients heal you. If you allow them to give you feedback about yourself, you're healing with them.
Yeah. Yes, I think so.
I agree with
that. I want to share a short story about why I do this work, and it
love
has psychoanalytic implications. So when I was 5 years old, I suddenly and seemingly randomly looked down at my thighs and thought they were too big, too much, and I should be smaller. 5 years old.
Oh.
And
wow.
Thus began my entry into the world of eating disorders. You know, by the time I was a teenager, I would just cycle between anorexia, restricting, binging and purging, binging. It was just one after another. And finally, I went to therapy in college. I went once a week for 3 years, and I talked to my therapist about everything but the fact that I had an eating disorder. I talked about my relationship that I had with my parents. I talked about future and school, whatever. I talked about everything in my life, and she had no idea that I was really the poster child of eating disorders. And by the time I left treatment, 3 years without ever talking about food even, my eating disorders were gone. And people say, "Dr. Nina, how is that possible? How do you recover, liberate yourself from eating disorders without ever talking about food?" And I said, "Because it was never about food."
She exactly.
Myself. And why at the age of 5 did I suddenly randomly go, "My thighs are too big"? Well, my parents are both college professors, very sort of Ivy League and professorial, and I was me. And I was constantly being told, "You're too loud, you're too emotional, you're too much." So this idea of being too much was interpreted by my little 5-year-old mind as physically too much.
Brilliant.
And that is the essence of it, which I did not understand until I went for analytic training. But
Absolutely. And that's so interesting because I always wanted to restore 18th century houses, and I lived in, you know, New England my entire adult life, and I especially wanted to create the original colonial kitchen, right? And the colonial kitchen, I realized as I analyzed it, is the original womb, right? The kitchen, you know, with the big hearth and the big fireplace, because I was born 3 months early. And so
wow.
I didn't stay in the kitchen, in the cooker long enough.
Right.
Isn't that? And
wow.
I said, "Oh my God, I want to go back and I know. Everything has a meaning. Everything.
Yes.
And what's amazing is it makes so much sense. Now, I was almost 300 pounds my entire adult life, and I did not have an eating disorder. Because I was born so early, I missed the third trimester, so my whole endocrine system didn't develop. Now, this was the plague of my existence because people would moo at me and say I was, you know, lazy and a slob, and they thought I wasn't. My husband would say, "You eat less than anorexics. You know, you're the most austere person I know." It took me decades to understand because I was born early. My endocrine system didn't handle stress well, and if I'd get stressed, I would just hold water. So it was so unbelievably painful for me. And my husband told me in the very, very beginning of our marriage, which was, you know, in the very, very early 80s, he said, "I have a vision and I see you melting." Because when he first knew me, I was very, very thin. And I said, "When, Jean?" And he said, "I don't know." And then almost 30 years later, when we are about to embark on our final trip to Europe, he said, "I had the vision again and I see you melting." And I said, "When?" And he said, "Very, very soon." After he leaves his body from the bee sting, he appears to me in a visitation. He said, "I have to go. I had to be in the form I'm in because now I have the power to fix your metabolic disorder. I'm rebirthing you." And I got thin. I didn't change anything. So for me, it was kind of some otherworldly miracle that he brought me his metabolism and so on. It's unbelievable. So, but I understand, isn't it amazing? Because ultimately, it was the love, because I could feel him close to me in spirit form, freed from the physical vessel of his physical body, so that he could somehow enter me and bring his love to me in a way that he couldn't even do as palpably. So ultimately, it was my own tremendous abandonment wound and early birth combined with my physiological, you know, malformation. What an extraordinary story, you know.
And it is an incredible story. And also, 3 months early, 30 years of marriage, 300 pounds, that those multiples of three.
Oh, how brilliant of you to see that. How brilliant of you to see it, because his birthday was all integers of three, like 12, 2, 21. Everything added up to three, the Holy Trinity. He had been for most of his life a very famous Jesuit priest. He taught at the Vatican. So the Holy Trinity, I mean, you picked that whole symbology up. Nobody has ever really gotten that. I tell all about this in Love Never Dies, but absolutely this was a divine appointment. And then he brought me the realization our relationships don't end, and that's what led me to go completely out of mainstream shrink world into helping people connect with their loved ones in spirit. Yeah.
And as one of my supervisors told me, it doesn't really matter what you're doing as long as it's, you know, legal. What matters is what is the outcome? What is result of it?
It's all about connecting. So now I'm coming full circle so that I'm helping people once again connect back to themselves, connect to others on the earth plane, and heal, you know, yourself through the connection, through being radically emotionally naked, and through this new energetic system upgrade where I'm combining the transdermal magnesium to help, you know, our hearts and our minds and everything reboot, so we're able to connect better to ourselves and others. So, I mean, there's always a thread. I mean, everything we're doing is connection in one way or another, you know.
And healing, hopefully.
Hopefully we're going to form a better connection, and through that connection we're going to heal, because our original connections produce the, you know, the damage that led to the dysfunctions and the eating disorders. I've just loved having you. In the last 2 minutes, let everybody know how to find you, mention what you'd like to promote, everything, okay? Do this, please.
Okay, well, they can find everything on my website, Dr. Nina Inc., DrNinaInc, DrNinaInc.com. You can get free downloads from me. You can sign up to be on the VIP list to be first to know about my upcoming book. You can link to my YouTube channel, which is Break Free from Binge Eating with Dr. Nina, and find my radio show. All the links are on Dr. Nina Inc. Or follow me on Instagram, Dr. Nina Inc. I'm there, I'm everywhere. And I
You are everywhere. You're everywhere. So do you want to leave everyone in the last second with a parting message.
My parting message is that there is always hope. It doesn't matter how old you are, how many diets you've been on, how depressed you've been, how much you've struggled in your life, there is always hope. As long as you have a pulse, there is hope that you can change your relationship to yourself and the world and therefore to food, and you can truly live instead of merely exist. There is hope.
Exactly. Exactly. And it's just, this entire show has been a beautiful sound bite and a beautiful video bite. And I now just had my first wonderful bite of discovering you and your work. And I've just loved having you, and it's been wonderful. So let's stay in touch.
Absolutely. Thank you really so much for having me.
Absolutely enjoyed you in every way. So that's all I have for you this time. See you next time on Love Never Dies Radio and Dr. Turndorf, Turn On the Love on Binge Networks. See you soon.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.